Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am your co-host, Matt Koplik.
And I'm your other co-host, Orfei, also known in some circles as John Stephen Wascavage.
Mm-hmm. Think about it. Have you ever seen Orfei and John Wascavage in the same place? You haven't.
The answer is no. And there's a reason for that. And it's called a restraining order. No. Hi, everybody. We took a little bit of a break because life.
Life. But we all had things going on.
Yes, but I like this. I like that we're the kind of friendship where we don't need to talk every day. We can kind of go away for a little bit, go on a little trip to an ashram in India, and come back and just be like we never even left. So sure, it may have been weeks since we last talked. Sure, the Tony nominations, we had our predictions and they came out and we didn't follow up with that. But hey, we had shit to do. You probably had shit to do too, so why were you procrastinating?
People, I don't know why you're yelling at us, okay?
Yeah.
We busy, you busy, okay? Everybody's busy.
Seriously. No, seriously, though, it's very nice to be back in our recording studio, which, of course, actually is just you in a corner of your apartment and me at a kitchen table in Pittsburgh. So...
Yeah. I mean, is that not how most people record together?
I honestly think this is how everything is recorded, ever.
Yeah. I think I heard a rumor that's how... I think I heard a rumor that's how they recorded all of the SpongeBob cast album.
I actually believe that.
Yes.
I don't think that's just an all that chat rumor. I think it's an all that rumor. And not talking about the 90s sketch comedy show that shot Amanda Bynes and Kenan Thompson into stardom. Gosh, what the irony that it was the two of them that were shot into stardom. And gosh, what different roads
what
they
happened
took.
What happened to Laura Beth, what's-her-face?
Laurie Beth Dimberg, right?
Yeah, what happened to her?
She did a couple movies, didn't she? She probably did.
She probably,
to make it applicable to this podcast, she probably did a play somewhere.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, she's in like the Cleveland Players production of Noises Off Now or something.
Exactly, probably. She is probably... trying real hard at her North Shore apartment. Apartment?
What are words? Who needs to speak to John Wascavage every day when he makes up words like that?
And the thing is like, you would think that maybe this is just, I mean, it's not early morning, but early-ish morning, John. But I've actually been awake for almost 4 hours. I haven't even had coffee until right now. I just took my first sip. So maybe that's why I'm... this way. You also inspired me to Google search Laurie Beth Dimberg. She was on the Steve Harvey Show for a while. I remember that.
Okay.
She's 42 years old.
Damn.
She made a brief cameo in Workaholics. And then in March of 2018, she joined fellow All That castmates for a semi-reunion on the MTV TV show Wild and Out. Well, if that doesn't answer all of our questions, I don't know what does.
I smell a new bio musical coming to Broadway.
A new nymph musical. coming
the rise and fall of Lori Beth Denberg.
Coming next summer. Denberg. Speaking it's a lot like Hamilton, but
exactly. Denberg, that's the total title. Denberg.
Exactly.
The rise and fall of an icon.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
Speaking of 42, someone has a birthday coming up.
Who could it be? Who could it be?
No. He reminds me of Skeletor, but a lot gayer.
Yes, I would agree with that. And thank you for the compliment. It's me, you guys. I turn 30 in 3 motherfucking days. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I just want to thank everyone who got me here to this point. I never thought I would make it to 30. Not in a morbid way. It's just that if you ever met me, you also should be very surprised that I have survived making it to 30.
Absolutely. You know, I always tell people when they, like, want some sort of praise for a basic achievement, I say, you want a cookie?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I did my laundry today. You want a cookie? For right. you, I would actually give you a cookie every day after you turned 30 just because you're still here.
I'm God, in the name of God, a.k.a. Elaine Stritch, I am still here. You know, mm-hmm. it's, damn, we did it.
Damn.
Yes, we can.
You remember Lori Beth Denberg, and you're here.
I do. She's only 12 years older than me. Yeah, so I turned 30 this Sunday, and I close a show that I opened last week on my 30th birthday, my dream show, A New Brain, where I'm playing Gordon Schwinn, and I know that people hate it when I'm earnest and they hate it when I'm very emotionally vulnerable, or they like it. I don't know. I don't really care. But
you're not a people pleaser at all.
I'm not. I don't think I ever really have been. I think every time I try to please people, it ends up going horribly awry. So I feel just so happy and excited. Yeah, so the plan is I close my show on Sunday, gonna go out hopefully bowling with the cast. I want to just do something really fun that night. Then I fly back in Monday morning, Memorial Day. You did respond to my Facebook invite, right, Matt? I want to bring the drama live in front of you all. Did you respond?
Put me on the spot. New phone. Who dis? No, cool. No, I did.
I thought you did.
I totally did.
But I'm having like a big birthday shindig that day, and then just like the tiniest group of people, and I, because it was brought up, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I think I want to escape a room, and one of the escape rooms I've never done is the theater that's downtown. Have you ever done it?
I've never done a single escape the room. It gives me a lot of anxiety.
Okay, then we're gonna talk after this because okay. I think there's still like one or two spaces as long as no one else bought any who said they weren't going to.
Unless like any of your real friends have turned you down.
Because you would love it. And I just love the idea of having to escape in a theater for my 30th birthday. Because what a metaphor.
It's a big metaphor.
It's a big old metaphor. No, I'm not escaping theater. I could never escape it, unfortunately. But no,
you're always going to be trapped in it.
I'm just like that closet, R. Kelly. Weird reference.
Speaking of pee,
how have you been?
I've been good. I recently moved to Lin-Manuel Miranda's neck of the woods, the Washington Heights.
Literally,
I am right next to the George Washington Bridge. Like it is, I should start charging people to take like headshots on my fire escape because it's right in front of the bridge. Like what a wonderful spot to have your headshots taken. Or like just charge like a bitty soprano and her tenor friend to shoot music videos of Tonight
on
my fire escape
right
every weekend
on your fire
for like a
escape.
Solid grand. Yeah, gosh. Right on the fire escape. It'd be perfect. But yeah, that's exhausted me to no end. And I did, since we last spoke, I did see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
I love a low budget, no name production.
Yes, it's straight from Nymph, off Broadway. No one expected anything from it, but here we are.
No.
I have to say, actually, so I went with my editor, who is not super into Harry Potter. He, like, did some research, but he had never read the books. He had never seen the movies. He had basically just, like, read synopses of all the books. And I will say, they do a very good job in the playbill. They have, like, a little synopsis of every book, and then they, like, give you key phrases and characters to know. So if you've never done any Harry Potter research, like, you at least will get some sort of background from the playbill. That said, I don't know why you would go see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child if you have zero knowledge of Harry Potter.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's like, it is very much a sequel. And like any sequel story, you gotta know a little bit of what happened beforehand. So I did promise to hashtag keep the secrets. So
okay.
I will try to appeal to both people who want some spoilers and people who are like, no spoilers. The theater is gorgeous. It is. For those of you who don't know, they renovated that barn ass motherfucking theater, the Lyric, to give you guys an idea of how large this theater used to be. It was two theaters originally that they combined into one. Cause
I did not know that.
You did not know that?
No.
Garth Drabinski, who hopefully some of our listeners will know who he is, Canadian producer of like Ragtime and Parade and Kiss of the Spider Woman, who then eventually went to jail for defrauding his investors. Like cooked the books all over the place. He was like, Ragtime's going to be the next Chorus Line. It's going to run for a million years, so we need the biggest theater imaginable for it, because who doesn't want 2,000 seats in your theater?
Most producers now.
I know, right? Well, he learned the hard way. So he literally took two theaters that no one had used for a long time and pushed them together to make this giant-ass theater. And then for like 20 years, no one could fill it because it's so huge. So they did this big renovation of it.
It is smaller than the Broadway theater, right? Because that theater...
it's bigger. It's bigger.
It is? You're kidding. Because I've actually never been in the Lyric. I've never seen a show in it.
Now that you go see... If you go see Harry Potter, it won't feel quite as big because they have made it more intimate. But it used to be like 1,900 seats. I think it outstripped the Gershwin where Wicked is by like a couple dozen seats or so. But so now they've made it a bit smaller, a little more intimate. It's still a pretty big theater, but it's not ginormous. So the theater's gorgeous. There are H's all over the carpet, and like the sconces are hippogriffs and phoenixes. It's like, oh god, it's just like beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Are the H's for Hallelujah or what? I don't get
that. They were for me. I can't speak for everyone in that theater, but for me, I was saying Hallelujah everywhere.
I get it.
They have a part of the lobby, a wing of the lobby is just like walls with drawings of Patronuses. What book are you now on, John?
I'm still on 4. I had to take a bit of a hiatus. Okay. Probably since the last time you asked, I'm probably in the same exact spot because I have not been able to watch.
Okay.
You've been busy with your new brain. I was busy.
Yeah, she's busy. But you do know what a Patronus is. That's book 3.
Yes. I'm very familiar with Patronus.
Yes. So all that said, that is all very beautiful. The show itself is so incredibly designed and staged in a way that, like, there are very few super high-tech, like, throw-in money all that on the stage kind of effects. A lot of it is, like, very simple and just imaginative. Given, like, Disney a run for their money of, like, here's how you can make magic without, like, $5 million on one prop. Like, it's just, it's, like, a lot of trick staging and wires ever so discreetly placed. It's really beautiful.
Sounds like intercourse with me.
Well, you know, we can ask the 7 million people who've done that.
No, it's not 7 million. And probably my Patronus, if we're being honest, is like a millennial who wants rosé and she's not getting it.
She ordered rosé 20 minutes ago and she's still waiting.
She's not pleased.
No. If it makes you feel any better, my Patronus is an 87-year-old woman who also ordered rosé, but with a side of ice, because it's just a little too strong for her. Just a little too strong for her.
She definitely did.
But Harry Potter is all the rosé. So dry, so easy to chug down. Some might say the same of me.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar.
Have you seen Bernadette yet?
I haven't, and I don't think I'm going to be able to.
No.
I mean, I get back next week, but isn't she done this? Is she done this week? Is she done
already? I thought she ended in end of June. Or am I making
that up? Well, then I might be able to see her. I would love to see her. I would really love to see her in that role, and I've heard such amazing things.
Yeah.
And I would love to see some of the other cast changeovers, like Charlie Stemp as Barnaby Tucker, because he... I saw him when I was in London last year in my first West End show. He starred in Half a Sixpence. And let me tell you, there was a gaggle of gays on this London trip that I, if you can believe it, bonded with extremely. And we all, during intermission, as a group, as a thirsty, thirsty group, found this poor Charlie Stemp West End actor on Facebook and all friend requested him at the same time, being like... One of us is going to get it. Like, one of us, he's got to take the bait on one of us. We're like all types of a buffet right here. And only to find out the next day from our accompanist, in like a class with a Les Mis director, the accompanist was like, oh no, he's like very straight. And I was like, no. But he is such a beautiful dancer, and a beautiful face that I would really like to see him in that role as well. Although I am very... kind of disappointed. I had reached out to some of my friends who were on the other side of the team in Hello Dolly, and I was like, hey, just want to know, like, because the original Barnaby in this revival was not a dancer. Taylor Trench nary a danced. So yes. I was like, are you going with that version for the tour? Or are you guys going to keep the Charlie Stemp, like, amazing dancer version? He's like, we're keeping the Charlie Stemp amazing dancer version. I was like, cool, 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 cool. Goodbye.
Yes, who wants to be on the tour anyway? Whatever. Fuck you.
Yeah. Whatever. Betty Buckley. Whatever.
Yeah. Fuck you, Betty Buckley. Yes. I would. I have not seen Bernadette or Charlie yet, but I've heard wonderful things about both. So, fingers crossed. My fingers are very crossed for you, John.
Same.
Moving right along, merrily we roll along. We made some Tony predictions.
We're getting a revival. Did you hear about that? Sorry.
Yes, I did. I did. Off Broadway, fiasco. The people who did Into the Woods.
Yeah, the people who brought us that lovely off-Broadway production of Into the Woods, which I adored, which most of the actors were... They weren't really instrumentalists, but if you played an instrument here or there, it helped. But it was a super pared-down production. Completely loved it. Yeah, and so I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with that, because... everyone knows that that show is a mess.
I was about to say, Marilee is one of those shows where it's like... you know how, like, some women say with childbirth, like, you kind of forget the pain, which is why you always, like, want to have another kid half the time?
Yeah.
I feel like, Merrily, we always forget that it doesn't work until you see another production of it, and you're like, oh, yeah, this doesn't work.
Yeah, but if anyone could, like, flip something on its side and, like, because maybe that's a way that would help it work. I don't know, but sorry. Okay, that was a tangent.
That was barely a tangent, girl. Come on, we've had worse.
I know we've had way worse, but yes, okay. So there's a revival of that. But back to what you were saying, since we have last recorded, the nominations did come out, and we now get to see how brilliant we are.
Yeah, well, I do want to say, in the last episode, I ended up cutting it because after we recorded... the final Tony eligibility rulings came out after we recorded. And I had originally said Harry Potter was eligible for score, only for the next day for the Tonys to be like, no, Matt Coplick, you're wrong. So I cut that bit out because I was like, by the time this episode was released, everyone will just think I didn't read the rulings, which I do religiously.
I believe you do.
Yes. So, yeah, they came out and we were right in some respects and not right in others. What is your takeaway from this? I know you haven't seen a bunch of the stuff. I know you saw Once on This Island and Band's Visit and Frozen.
We were right on with Best Musical. You know, like we really nailed that category. I think play, we both kind of more or less admitted that we were a little less well-versed in that, especially me. I think, yeah, I... I I think it'll be very interesting because it's definitely very much the year of the, like, one underdog kind of in each category up against these, like, titans, you know, and not titans in the sense of that every musical is perfect that they're up against or that every production that they're up against is perfect, but that has some kind of huge commercial draw. You know, you have Band's Visit up against Frozen, Mean Girl, SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, different plays like Junk up against Harry Potter or Latin History for Morons, which was starring John Leguizamo. You know, you have Carousel and My Fair Lady, two crazily well-established revivals that people love seeing and love so much and have been getting great reviews, up against the little show that could, the little revival that could once on this island. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested by that aspect of these nominations.
Yeah. So, fun fact, everybody, yours truly, Matt Koplik, will actually be attending the Tony Awards this year.
Oh my god.
I don't know if you saw
Kevin Spacey finally got a date.
He did. He's finally brought back to the Tony Awards. I don't know if anyone saw on my Instagram. I was in a trying on a tux. It. That's what it was for. So it's only from the side. You don't see the full tux because I wanna keep it a surprise. But I'll be going. And a friend of mine was being like intentionally shady when she's like, I'm so jealous of you. Not that jealous though, because it's not going to be that great of a Tony Awards. And I was like, yeah, I mean, there's no like big Hamilton this year you know, like even a revival, like there's no South Pacific, like there's not the show that everyone's like excited to see sweep. But I would argue that it's actually going to be a very interesting Tony Awards because there are very few categories that are like a sure thing.
Completely.
Yeah. Like, Harry Potter will very clearly win play. I would say Band's Visit is probably, it's pretty much a sure thing for score. About everything else, though, like, there is a possibility that, like, someone else could get it other than whatever we consider the front runner to be. And that is very exciting to me.
How do you feel about the actor categories, you know?
Specifically actors or, like, all the acting categories?
Specifically the actors who are kind of in each category. You know, I'm looking at a list right now. Mm. Do you think any of those are shoo-ins? I could possibly argue that I think that it would be very, very bizarre for Nathan Lane not to win for Angels in America. But agreed. I have heard that Anthony Boyle in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is amazing. He's the one who plays Lucius's son, right?
Or yes. Malfoy's Scorpius. Son. He plays Scorpius Malfoy. Yeah. He is amazing. But that's another thing. In that category, it is very clearly Nathan Lane opposite Anthony Boyle. Like, those are the two And I see a world in which either one of them gets it because Nathan Lane is giving a, like, career best performance in Angels in America.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, I've never seen him better. Do you have a dog over there?
There are dogs in my housing because of my housemate. So say hi, doggies. Doggies on a podcast.
Head doggies on the podcast. Yes. But then on the other hand, Anthony Boyle is really fantastic in Cursed Child. Everyone in that production is really good. With the exception of the actress who plays McGonagall, which I'm not throwing shade at. She's just not on par with everyone else. So I could honestly see either one of them getting it. I mean, Nathan Lane has the credit in, like, the theater community that Anthony Boyle is still probably going to have to establish for himself. But, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't tell you with confidence which one I think will win. I could honestly see it going either way. And same thing with lead actor in a musical.
Same. I was just looking at that category. I was looking at these names and I was just thinking it could be any of you guys.
Yeah. Every year I try to see one show the night before the Tony Awards, just like the energy in the theater is always so electric. So like last year it was Hello Dolly. The year before that, I think it was Color Purple, and then that year before that was Fun Home. This year, I chose My Fair Lady, and it will be a wonderful night.
That means that Lauren Ambrose is going to win then, because every show you've just mentioned, didn't the leading actress win
Except for Fun Home. But that was okay. I think I saw Kelly O'Hara like the week after King and I opened. But it could be Lauren Ambrose. She apparently has missed a couple of performances this week, which might hurt her chances because I think Tony voters were there.
You won't go to a performance where a lead is out. That it's a rule.
Okay. Then that makes me feel better for her.
I mean, they could take that into consideration of the fact that she's been calling out, and so it's like, well, can she do this role? What's going on here? So people might put that into, but they are going to actually see her. You cannot see your show. You can see it, but you cannot vote on that.
What I meant is, it's entirely possible that, say, this weekend, Tony voters were supposed to go and then contacted by Lincoln Center to reschedule their tickets, which might make, you know, as you said, might miff them of, can she do it? That said, I cannot discuss her or Henry Hayden Patton. I don't know how you say his name. Their chances.
Hayden Patton. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hayden
Panettiere. I won't be seeing them for like another 2 weeks. So for what I've heard, he's brilliant.
Who is he? I don't know him.
He's a British actor of some sort. He was on The Crown. I'd never watched The Crown.
I've never watched The Crown either.
Yeah, and he apparently was on Downton Abbey, but like after I stopped watching. So I was just like, he really wants me to not know who he is.
Yeah, I never watched that either, unfortunately.
It's worth, the first season's worth it, if only for Maggie Smith.
Yeah.
But like, she's always worth it.
Maggie Smith.
He could win. I would probably put my money on Ethan Slater, but
I was kind of thinking the same thing, just because of the who else is in that category.
Yeah. Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub's already won, right?
No, he's never won.
For a play?
Never won. He hasn't won yet. And he does have the benefit of being in the front runner for Best Musical. And he really is. It's a hard performance to tell people who haven't seen it why he would deserve it, because he doesn't really sing in it, but he is the anchor of that show and is so heartbreaking in a really
understated and simple way.
Like he does not come at the audience. He's like, I'm gonna break your heart. He just is dropped in and he is. There's an argument for all four of those gentlemen. The only reason why I would not vote for Joshua Henry is because I think he has the potential to be a phenomenal Billy. I don't think he is in this production, and I think that's just the production working against him. But, he could still win. It's a great role. He sings it so ferociously. And he is so incredibly talented that even, like, him at his not quite full potential is better than most of us, you know, on our best day. So there you go. I don't know. Something I did not see happening was 6 Tony nominees for Best Actress. That was like,
I didn't either. They really could not. I guess it must have been a very close call when the votes came in.
I guess so.
And it's all, I mean, we have a couple Tony winners in there, which is pretty norm. We have
newbies.
We have some Tony newbies, and we have some people who should win, like Katrina Lenk. no offense. Like I think from the other actresses that I've seen, although I've only seen one of the other nominees. Yeah, I haven't seen Mean Girls. I haven't seen Jesse Mueller in Carousel, and I haven't seen LaShawns or Lauren Ambrose. I find it almost impossible that any of them are giving a more nuanced and heartbreaking performance as Katrina Lenk is. And I feel that sometimes Tony Awards can be, as a lot of awards can be, a cumulative win. And I think last year she really claimed her space and her stake in this theater community with her Tony nomination for Indecent. And I think she just knocked it out of the park with this next one. So I don't know. I really think, who do you think, if not her, it would go to? Or do you think that she might not get it?
The only person I can imagine winning over her is Lauren Ambrose, and that is just theoretically off of the fact that it's a revival.
Yes,
and the reviews, and reading her reviews and a lot of the feedback I've gotten about her. So I cannot say that based off of, like, legitimate critiques. I have seen all the other nominees, and I'll say it is a really varied category in terms of what kind of performances are there. Like,
it's kind of insane.
Yeah, like, Katrina, like, is giving the dropped-in, earthy, breakthrough leading performance. Haley Kilgore is giving the really fresh and likable Broadway debut. Taylor Lautner is giving us full diva worship. And you know, LaShawn's and Jesse Mueller are theater staples. So there's, you know, there's a little bit of everything. Of the performances I've seen, so taking Ambrose out, Katrina Link is by far and away my favorite and my choice for the award. A distant second for me would actually be Taylor Lautner. Yeah. I really hate how much I liked her in Mean Girls.
That's the point.
Yeah, I don't mean to shade Taylor Lautner. I have only seen her in Bring It On, which of a show that I don't love, I thought she had one of the worst roles in it. So I went into Mean Girls with not a super high opinion of her, not a low opinion, but just like not really an opinion. And she really did a great job. That show, I think I said, is like designed and staged to just like focus on her. And it would work if she wasn't as good as she is in the role.
My name is Regina George, and I am a massive deal. Fear me, love me, stand and stare at me. And these are real.
I would not pick her to win, but like, say Katrina Lenk pulled a Julie Andrews and said, I'm dropping out of the race. I'll go, okay, well, congrats, Taylor. That's what I would do.
We were actually talking about this in my cast the other day that, and sorry, I'm going to take a tangent. I'm going to take a tangent pill.
Take a tangent pill, girl.
And I just realized that if anyone was going to know the answer to this, you would know the answer because I could not find it online. Some of the youngins, because there are a couple of babies in my cast, did not know about the very historic moment of Julie Andrews turning down her nomination for Victor Victoria. My question that none of us could find the answer to, and I was not sure of, did they pick someone to replace her in that, or did they just have an empty spot in that category?
She technically was still nominated. I'm almost sure her name was still read at the award ceremony, like when they listed off the nominations. She just made a very public statement of like, I reject it and I do not vote for me because I will not accept it. Yeah, which led the way for Donna Murphy to win her second Tony.
Right.
Yeah, they did not replace her in the lineup. And You can look on the Tony Awards ceremony. It's on YouTube. I think her name is still read when they do the list, but she's not there. Like, she's not in the room.
All right.
For those of you youngins who are listening who don't know, as John was just saying, legendary, like, international treasure Julie Andrews came back to Broadway in the 90s in a stage adaptation of Victor Victoria, and proceeded to be the only nomination that production got. And she made a big curtain speech where she rejected the nomination because she said, everyone in this production is doing such wonderful work. I hate that they were all snubbed. And I, in solidarity with them, I reject my nomination, which was a very bold move of her.
Very bold. What a badass bitch, you know? Yeah. Just
something you can only do if you are Julie Andrews.
Completely. If I got a Tony nomination for, I don't know, what do I do? Let's say making awful puns. I would be remiss if I were to turn down my Tony nomination for puns. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I'd pull a full Billy Porter where I'd be like, oh, I share this with all of you, but I'm going to keep it. You know, like that kind of thing. Like, oh, my nomination is your nomination, but it's my nomination.
Sorry, that was a tangent, but that was an informative tangent.
It was, and it was related to the conversation today. So, like, I feel like we, over the last few episodes, we have grown in our tangents. They are always related to the conversation. We haven't talked about Drag Race or butt sex in a while. So, like, you know,
on microphone.
Yes, exactly. When we text each other, that's something else.
Yeah, honestly.
I'm just waiting for the day that Miss Vanjie goes into Chicago.
Miss Vanjie. The name on everybody's lips is gonna be Vanjie. I wanted to make that video when it was at its peak, but I was too busy acting.
Oh, something that I forgot that we didn't talk about it yet because we discussed it before we started recording. Little bit of casting news, everybody. Thrice Tony nominated actor and the man I always fantasize before going to bed at night, Andy Carl, will be returning to us on the B-Way next season. In a musical version of little indie known film, Pretty Woman. I was most excited for this show because it was going to be finally the Broadway debut of Samantha Barks. Like, she was finally going to make it.
I know.
And then Andy Carl had just come in and steal her headline.
He really did. He snatched her weave.
Right? He's, you know, snatched her edges.
But I guess we'll find out if her bark is worse than her bite.
Oh, God. I'm unplugging my microphone now, and I'm
that would get a Tony nomination for puns.
Yes, I reject your Tony nomination for puns. Goodbye. Yeah, Steve Kazee had some family problems. I know his house had burned down, and then his father is sick, I believe.
Poor guy.
Yes, he's had a lot of rough patches the last few years. I don't pretend to know him. I only know of his life, of what he has made public. So
right.
I can only go off of that. But
yeah, I don't know him from A to Z, but you know.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Superstar. I imagine you clapping your hands like a seal right now. It's just terrible.
I am clapping my hands like a seal.
Like a seal. Oh, fuck.
I'm proud of myself for that twund.
Girl, you're a proud Mary.
I am a proud Mary.
And like all proud Mary, when you pee, it burns.
Gosh, tell me about it.
Proud Mary, keep on burning.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, sorry, that was a reach.
Gosh. Yeah, no, I'm super excited because I love Steve Kazee and what I've seen him in. However, I think that Andy Carl is just one of those people who are just so naturally goddamn likable. That no matter what he does in a show, it's a success. Does that make sense? And that's not me downplaying the fact that he's an amazing actor, an amazing performer. That's all included. For me, it's just the fact that he's the perfect package of a performer. He's so talented and so likable, so goddamn handsome.
Yeah.
So, gosh, on the 20th century, I just wanted to, like, jump on stage while he was just, like, doing push-ups with Kristen Chenoweth on his back. And just, God, just...
Yeah. Just, like, just sit on his face till Tony night, you know?
I did want to sit on his face.
No, I know what you mean, though, because...
It goes from being he's a nice person, like, what a nice, respectable young man, and then we ruin it by being, you know, by saying things. Like,
and I want to sit on his face.
I want to sit on his face. To the 13-year-old girls who listen to this podcast.
Listen.
That's not a sexual thing. Sitting on someone's face is, it's a new, it's like planking.
Is that, when two grown, Sweetheart, when two grown adults love each other and respect each other very much, and one of them looks like Andy Carl.
Yeah.
No.
Sit on their face.
Just sit on their face. No!
Yes. Yes.
But yes, let, please. But
let
yes.
The car flow through you.
Yes, yes, please. What I was going to say before we got into, you know, salad dressing. Oh my god.
Salad bar.
You were talking about, you know, how fucking likable he is and why it'll help him with this role. Because the role is not a super likable role. So having someone who is so naturally charming will infuse it with a bit of life. Something that always bugs me with Broadway fans is if a performer is talented and, you know, they have their hardcore fans, those fans will, you know, bring them up for dream casting of like any role you can possibly think of. And they don't take into account, like, you know, all the other elements that really make someone right for a role.
Yeah.
So like, it would be the equivalent of someone going like, Ashley Park for Ava Perone. It's like, she's a talented girl.
Right.
She does not, she cannot sing Ava. I don't know, like Ava Noblezada for Cunegonde in Candide. It's like, she's so talented, but do not bring her up for that. But like, you know what I mean? Like, if someone is just like has talent and there's a core group of young Broadway fans for them, they will bring them up for anything you can think of.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, what they're right for.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that Andy Carl's casting this is a prime example of why you can't just put any old person in that role. It has to be someone who is talented, but also very likable with a great deal of charisma. Cause
uniqueness.
That, yeah, because that uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Because that role is a wet washcloth in a piece where there are a lot of vibrant washcloths. And
yeah.
You got to get someone who can spice it up a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's glue.
No one likes a non-spicy washcloth, if you know what I mean.
No. If you're going to be the glue in a piece, you better be glitter glue. No, I mean?
Mm. Oh, mm-hmm. I love that. I love that.
Thank you. Well, it's like glitter. You know what I mean by like the glue role in a show or a movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, yeah. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like to give everyone prime examples, Emma Stone in The Help. She's technically the lead, but she's also the least interesting character in it. But she's the one that everyone goes through. Same thing with Katie Heron in Mean Girls. I maintain Lindsay Lohan gives my favorite glue performance of all time. But it is Katie Heron is a glue.
Because she was probably sniffing glue, honestly.
She probably, yeah. That's, oh God, it makes me so sad.
She wasn't sad. Don't be sad for her.
I'm sad for her.
She was very happy.
She was very happy at the time. I'm just sad for her now.
Oh, she's doing commercials for lawyers. She's fine. Have you seen that?
I have seen that, actually. It makes me very upset.
It is actually quite upsetting.
And, like, her face just won't unfreeze.
No, the star of Herbie Fully Loaded just completely scrounging for pennies by agreeing to appear in an ad for legal advice and legal representation. Because she's had so many bouts with the law.
She also did a movie with like a $50,000 budget opposite James Dean, international porn star. So like,
what?
Do you not know about that?
No.
Oh, okay. History lesson, y'all. This was like I think
James Dean, the porn star.
Yes, porn star. Like the one who, like, speaking of sitting on faces, like James Dean.
Gosh.
God. Okay. So I'm so sorry, 13-year-old fansies. Your parents must like be seeing a rapid change in you as you listen to this podcast. This is the reason why we don't record every day. Because if we recorded every fucking day, we would be all of the youth of America would just be corrupted, being like, "Mom, who's James Dean, and why do I want to sit on his face?" Just like terrible.
What are you doing? What's happening to you? You're turning into such a hooligan. Are you doing drugs or hanging around with people on the streets? No, Mom. It's Broadway Breakdown. Get into it, bitch.
And slaps her and huffs some glue as they walk out the door.
Oh my gosh. Okay, sorry. So please tell me about this
Lindsay
Lohan
movie
porn.
Called The Canyons. I never actually saw it, but the screenplay was written by Bret Easton Ellis.
Oh my gosh, love him.
Yeah, like,
he wrote American Psycho.
Yeah. Less Than Zero.
Yes, Less Than Zero. Thank you. I was going to say Stranger Than Fiction. I was like, that is not it. Less Than Zero. I loved Less Than Zero growing up. Rules of Attraction. Mm-hmm. Very dark mind.
Yes, he had a very dark mind. Very twisted novels. But good writer. He's a very good writer.
Yes. Yes, he is.
He wrote this screenplay. Don't ask me what it's about. I don't know. And he and the director, through Kickstarter, raised... a significant amount of money at the time. This movie came out like 6 years ago, I want to say. So it was before Veronica Mars did their like $6 million fundraising on Kickstarter. Yes. So it was still like a big deal that I think they raised like maybe $100,000, $200,000, something like that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot. But again, I have to emphasize, Lindsay Lohan was their other star. So Lindsay Lohan, who was like probably paid like $5 or $6 million for Herbie Fully Loaded and I Know Who Killed Me. Who knows what she made on the Canyons? It's just like how far the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
And now I think she's on a British TV show with Rupert Grint.
What?
That she might get fired from. I don't know. She's like doing a lot of British stuff lately. Apparently they haven't gotten to the end of the rope with her.
Yeah, they're like, this is still happening with
us.
Yeah,
we'll still think you have it, Lindsay.
Yeah.
But look it up, the Canyons. I want to know exactly how much money they raised, because I remember at the time it seemed like a really big amount, but now when you think about how much money like Veronica Mars raised and all these other things.
It's probably 2 bitcoins in a dream.
Exactly. I mean, if I were Lindsay Lohan, I just would have done it for the thrill of working opposite James Dean.
Same. Honestly. Yeah.
If I can't sit on Andy Carl, I'll sit on James Dean.
That was one of my favorite old sayings. One of my favorite adages.
That's what my grandmother used to tell me when I was down and out in elementary school.
Yeah.
She goes, honestly. Matthew, if I didn't get a part in a play I wanted, she goes, Matthew, if you can't sit on Andy Carl, sit on James Dean.
So true.
Thank you, Sally.
Great advice.
Thank you, Sally.
Your grandma's name was Sally? That's my mom's name.
Oh, no. Well, I have 2 grandmothers, obviously. Sally and Nancy. Sally is the older one.
I'm familiar with genetics.
I don't know, John. Are you?
Probably not, no.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if it wasn't explained to me in Schoolhouse Rock, I don't know what it is.
If it wasn't explained to me in the prologue of Hamilton, no idea.
No. Bish, please. I need a time step and a dream. That's all.
Oh, that's all we ever need. That's great advice, though. Really great advice. Your grandmother's a kind, powerful woman.
She... Thunder thighs.
Same? I guess.
No, you do not have thunder thighs. You shut your whore mouth.
I'm more of like lightning thighs, because when I hit them together, it goes click, clack, crap. What the hell? Don't... I should do yoga and then have coffee.
Yeah.
Because it creates a weird karmic swirl of energy. You know?
I do know. And I regret everything that we've said today.
Same, but that's what we're here for.
Kids, if there's anything you should take away from today, regret everything.
Yeah.
Well, first...
Sit on Andy Carl's face,
then regret everything. True.
Yeah, when you're about to turn 30, it's the time to regret. It's the time to look back at the 3 decades that you've already had on this planet and go, oh, damn.
Yeah.
Oh, damn, I'm supposed to do something, I guess.
Yeah.
And then don't.
Don't. No,
just... Because I just started watching a Netflix docuseries and it's taking up all my time. I mean, it's only 6 episodes, but I don't want to do anything but watch it. Have you heard of Wild Wild Country? You would love it.
I have heard of that.
You would love it. It's insane. It's insane.
That's not the one about sex cult, is it?
It is the one about the sex cult. Oh, it's not just sex. It's a cult. And it has some of the... Just the... You know, some of these plays and these stories and these musicals that we know have such far-fetched or such dramatically interesting plots that you think, oh, that could never happen. Well, this shit really happened, and it is just insane. And I use the word insane a lot, being that I am an insane. But I mean it. Dear God, you would love it. Everyone who's listening to this podcast, you would just love it too, just because you obviously are a fan of insane people.
So
yeah,
I mean, if they're still latched on to this episode, God knows.
Yeah, if you are still latched on to this teat, I don't know what kind of milk you're getting, but it's not normal. So so you ain't normal either,
no,
Betsy.
Not at all. Well, anyway, kids, I think that's a good quote to end on today.
Yeah, Matt is ending early because he knows that I have therapy in 5 minutes, so he's being very kind.
Yeah, and I gotta go drown my sorrows in a bottle of whiskey.
Ooh, so early, but good for you. Nothing like a nooner whiskey. A whiskey nooner. Nope.
It was 5 o'clock yesterday. I'm still on that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, John, I would like to bring it to you this time. What diver should we end this week's episode on?
Well, I feel like we're going to at least get one more out before the... one more episode out before the Tonys.
I would like to.
So, yes, same. So I was going to end with Katrina Lenk, but I would actually rather save that for next week as a good omen to her winning this year, because I really want her to.
Okay.
So instead, you know what? I actually have not heard any of the Mean Girls soundtrack yet. So Taylor Lautermann, I'm impressed with your bitchiness. Let's hear it.
Oh, hopefully. God. Yeah.
Is there something that you could play that...
Those of you who,
I just
those of you
that
you
know
me, the Mean Girls score, you know what song we're going to close out on, bitches.
All right.
Yeah. And if I've done my job correctly after this, there will be two inserts of Taylor Lautermann, because we're going to close out on her big song, but my favorite song is not a big enough one to close out on. So I'll include that somewhere earlier in this episode.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
We talk about her a good amount. So actually, we just did a little bit of time traveling, because you will not have even realized that we made the plan for the Taylor Lautermann music that you just heard a couple minutes ago after you heard it.
Oh my God. It's like, oh my God.
It's Inception.
Guys, Taylor Lautermann will do another Rachel McAdams role in The Time Traveler's Wife, the musical.
Oh my God, you're kidding.
Well, with this time traveling section, yeah. It'll
be. Oh, I get it.
Yes, there you go.
It was a good joke.
It was a good joke. The best jokes are the ones you have to repeat and explain.
Yes.
They make you think. They make you think. Okay. So, everyone, this has been Broadway Breakdown. I am Matt Goblick.
And I am John Wiscavage. And this is A Mean Girl.
Regina George. Take it away, Taylor. Gross.
I couldn't hold it in.
That's what she said. Bye.
Bye. You can quote this. Whoa.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.